Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. It's the Sleep Number Everything Smart Bed Sale. Every smart bed and base are on sale during our Memorial Day event. Up to 50% off, plus free home delivery. Limited time. Exclusively to Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.
Tunnel Talk, a No Facts, All Feelings wrestling podcast on the Social Suplex Network. I'm Allie.
I'm Ann.
And I'm Leah.
Oh, well, welcome home, cheater.
Girls, I'd like to do my What's Making Me Happy. It's
Fuck
my week.
You.
I would love to do it.
Fuck off.
And girls, this week, the thing that's making me happy is my community. Mm. And by my community, I mean my new co-host. Japan podcast, Keeping It Strong Style,
Leah,
am a new official member.
What an amazing fit for you as a longtime New Japan fan. You know what? Frankly, I celebrate it. I'm happy for you.
I listened to it and I noticed that you had a lot to say about the moves that Jeremy was recounting. Yes. A lot to say about the booking, about the win-loss records.
You have to feel comfortable in your new home. I am doing research. I am learning work rate things.
Oh, your favorite thing to do, research.
I am memorizing matches.
And memorization.
Yeah. I'm going to get in there and I'm going to say, hey, that's an Nokiism. Hey. You're going to catch me saying that.
You will. Now, let me ask, are you watching videos for them?
Oh, a VHS.
I have to. Oh, sure. Tape
trading
sites.
You're out in Dave's garage.
Yeah.
You're out in Dave's shed.
Because she's got to know what happened on WrestleMania 13 versus 14, you know?
That's in my new home? Yes. We have
Listeners,
to live there.
If you're confused, it's because you don't know that Leah went behind our backs and guested on Keeping It Strong Style to discuss New Japan resurgence, correct or not?
Correct.
And to discuss the rate that how she thought what she thought of the moves and the ratings of the matches, and she said all kinds of perverted shit. And she said she loves them more than she loves us, and she doesn't want to be a part of our family anymore.
Never once.
She's gonna start keeping a star ranking notebook.
She's gonna keep it under her pillow because she dreams of stars now.
Neither one of those boys asked me one thing about my internal life. They're not going to make me examine the reality around me.
That shows a real lack of caring.
And
I guess that's right. Because I wouldn't want to join a family like that.
Enjoy your friends who'll know nothing about you, okay?
It's the last time you're going to see these, and it's interior, it's introspective conversation. Leah,
I'm just kidding. I would never leave.
And we're just kidding because, of course, we celebrate you getting out into the community of the Social Suplex Network and sharing our views. Us as a collective.
Mm-hmm. Josh told me something very interesting that I hadn't realized was true, which is that, when I got the DM from Jeremy that said, hey, let's make this joke a reality, come over, I was approaching it as an audition. I said, I got to impress them. If I am going to join Keeping It Strong Style full time. I've got to make them want it. But Josh told me that in the social suplex bylaws, you can actually just announce that you're leaving your show for another show and they have to accept you. So
in fact, I believe that Josh then briefly said, I will join Tunnel, which would be exciting for us, of course. We've never had a male co-host before. And then he quickly said, no, I won't. And why was that, do you think?
He'd come on and we'd make him give his opinions first, too. You know, like,
oh,
so
yeah.
What do we think of the men's bodies? Josh?
now, Josh, in this match, who do you think had the nicest nipples?
If you had to choose two kissers from this match, who you got? Who you betting on? Leah, you did a wonderful job. I really enjoyed it. Did you have fun over there?
I did have fun. It was the first time I had watched a New Japan pay-per-view from beginning to end, and I went into it with a spirit of curiosity and open-mindedness, and I thank you so much. I fell in love with a new man, and almost immediately, that man got milkshake ducked.
I think that's very beautiful.
Yeah, it's a classic wrestling journey.
Yeah. I said, TJP is my new son. And the internet said to me, have you not seen his tweets? And I said, no,
is
I didn't.
Is he the anti-vaxxer? I said, oh.
Oh.
So, much so to that consider.
That was a quick reversal. I just said, all right, Bat, I'm fine. I'm going to get back out of here.
If you could only like wrestlers whose political opinions were okay, it'd be a short list.
It'll be a little list, yeah.
Yep.
It's so important. I will say, though, it's important to not fully know.
Yeah.
The real problem is when people are coming forward and saying a lot about what they think. It's like, okay, I was trying to pretend. I was trying to play pretend.
Exactly. And I'd like to thank Chris Jericho for really not bringing things up very often.
Very rarely do I have to remember that.
Quiet.
It's just good business.
But Leah, you're happy to be back.
I'm very happy to be back. Of course I am.
Because you love us.
Yes. I at one point in the recording, I said, this man, Jarrell Nelson, I was like, he had a beautiful butt. And neither Jeremy or Josh.
Didn't say anything, did they?
They didn't have anything for that. But I know you girls would have agreed. Or at least, engaged.
I would have agreed. I would have had another body part to mention. Yeah. So another aspect of his appearance I would have to comment on. For sure.
Yeah.
I can't wait to look at a picture of him.
I'm glad to be home and so glad that I'm willing to actually do my what's making me happy.
Oh, thank
you guys,
God.
Are you guys ready for my sacrifice?
Wow. And listeners, get your hands together. Get ready to clap because we're supporting Leah this summer.
You know I need it.
We're so proud of her. She's thinking about what brings her joy. What is it, Leah?
Well, I buttered you up a little bit because I've stolen this thing that I'm about to mention from you. So, that's
great.
Fun. This week, my purchase, my little package of an African net. What is it?
An African net sponge.
Net sponge finally came in. You had stayed with me over Christmas and it was hanging in my shower.
I travel with one.
I was not impressed by it at the time. I said, that doesn't look comfortable. And so I ignored it.
I can't believe she brought this into my shower.
I simply ignored it. But this week I saw someone else. Oh, you had brought it up again in our group chat recently.
Another friend brought it up and then I piled on and said,
that's what
guys,
it was.
Get
and so
into
I said,
it.
You know what? Hey, it's summer. I could use a little new excitement, a little enrichment in the enclosure. And so I ordered it. I'm in love with it. I love it.
Yeah. Dude.
It's great.
Isn't it? It's like, obviously, for its exfoliating qualities, wonderful. But just the fact that it's long and you can do your back like that.
There's something like Baloo the bear about it when you're
it's a cartoon
scratching
motion.
Yeah,
for
when
sure.
You're scratching your own back with it, you just want to be sitting there like, you, ooh, ooh.
It's a cartoon duck kind of getting out of the shower.
Yeah. There's something very seductive about the whole thing. I really like it. It's a good experience.
I'm thrilled to hear that because I keep giving them out I've given them to my family for Christmas 2 years in a row. Like basically I'm like, you come to the CVS of me once a year and I give you a new African net sponge.
It's great. I mean, so I was looking at
the
internet.
Do they wear out or
no?
Is it like...
Apparently, this one. I was reading a post about it.
So
this
you just
girl was
make
like,
sure they have
"I've owned mine for 5 years, and there's nothing wrong with it. It's antibacterial. It's not like a loofah that you're supposed to replace every 3 months
because it dries out completely, yeah. And you can wash it and stuff. No, to be clear, it was that I had bought a pack that had like 10 in them, so it was like when it came time to do stockings for the second year in a row, I was like, "Well, we still got these, and they were big hit last year. I really converted some people, so nice, I just handed out a second round. It's like you never know. They might want to travel with one. I need a couple, so you need one for here and one for the, you know.
Yeah.
Totally. Wow, I love that.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a good one. Leah, never cheat on us again. Okay. This feels really good. Listen. This feels really good.
I'm happy to be home where I belong.
Thank you. And I'm happy you're happy. And I'm happy you thought about your happiness.
I'm glad. I'm very happy that I don't have to do it again for 3 weeks.
Should we just keep doing this for a while? I'm happy. Why are you happy?
Why are you always thinking of new ways for us to have to examine what's going on with us?
I'm just trying to heal us. Is that a crime? It's a crime for me to want us to have mentally well brains? I know we won't, but let's give it a shot. Let's give it a fair shot.
Gives you 6 months off, and then it's only every third week, you know?
And Anne, you love it.
I love it.
Thank you, Anne. It wasn't fully convincing, but...
I think you genuinely do.
I do love it, yeah.
You did sound like she had you at gunpoint.
She sounded like what was making her happy was torturing me a little. Okay. Do you guys... So go check out Leah on Kiss. She'll be here from now on. She lives here. She's ours. She belongs to us. Do you guys have fun with AEW this week?
I had a medium good time. It was...
Medium good time.
Yeah.
It was fine.
But there were some... Yeah. There were some trials to overcome.
Oh,
but
yeah. That's one of those things where I'm like, the stuff that was fun was very fun. And then as you said it, I was like, oh, yeah, there was that thing that took up at least 47% of the episode. Forgot about that.
Yeah. Well, to be clear, I wasn't baiting you guys for an answer. I don't even know why I asked. Like, I should have just gone into our schedule. But for some reason, I was like, I guess I better ask them if they, like, liked wrestling. Like, I guess I better ask them how they're feeling about wrestling.
Temperature check.
Okay, well, we'll get into the action. We'll talk about what made us happy, what made us not so happy. This week on Collision, Jon Moxley had a backstage promo in which he explicitly said, "I don't want to do some stupid rope promo," and then did one of his very classic rotist promos, which I found amusing.
It was truly the promo that, like, if you were going to do, like, a knockoff Mox impression, that's what you would do.
Yeah.
It's true. I feel like he's drifting more and more into kind of like a perfume ad territory, you know, where he's just kind of like, violence, what is it?
Okay, I wish that Mox would start selling us a signature scent.
Honestly, if Mox put out a signature scent, I would think about checking it out.
I'd want a sample at least. I'd go to the perfumery, the Perfume Genius or whatever. I'd get a little tiny vial for sure. And that's to all wrestlers, actually, if you feel like coming out with a signature scent.
Yeah. Listen, I know you're always out there hustling. You always want to be selling stuff. Mm-hmm. This is a market you have not tapped. Weird scents that we can buy.
Make weird scents.
Yeah, I wanna buy a little vial and then be like, open it with really confused and being like... What is it?
I want someone to be near me and say, "What do you smell like?" And I say, "Oh, it's Violence by Jon Moxley." Mox also called Samoa Joe one of the baddest guys in pro wrestling and said he's one of the few guys that Mox has respect for. And he said the only place he wants to be in the entire world is locked in a steel cage with him, which is very romantic. He really bigged him up quite a bit, to be honest. And then he also said that he doesn't need to be feared or respected by anybody. And Leah, I believe you had a little fact check there.
I was like, when the Death Rider started, wasn't he like, enough with this clown shit? We're bringing respect back to wrestling.
Yeah.
Yes. So now we're done with that?
Doesn't it sound like the kind of thing someone would say when no one fears or respects them on the entire internet anymore?
Now that's some vice principal shit. Yeah. I don't need you to respect me, but I do need you to finish lunch in silence.
And then you go into your office and you close the door and you sit down and you think, God, what did I do? This is where my life ended up. Why am I here? telling some kid I don't need them to respect me. They're so mean. They're so mean to me.
Doing a little cry in the office because a 15-year-old said something really hurtful.
Now I'm just imagining Mox slinking around backstage and then just like sitting, like going into Vice Principal Christopher Daniels' office and closing the door and just being like, I'm just going to sit here for a little while. Just going to sit. Vice Principal Christopher Daniels is just like, okay, yeah, sure. Let's both sit here quietly.
Stevie, you're still talent relations, right? Why are they so mean? Why are the other guys so mean to me? They're really hurtful.
They're really hurtful. Everyone's being really hurtful to me these days. I wish I were just locked in a steel cage with Samoa Joe already. Samoa Joe and Mox then main evented Dynamite. This started, I think, 13 minutes before the end of the ep, which, given that we'd started out, we were like, I think that could be easily 40 minutes. We knew we were in for a long one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was all time ready to go to bed. And so I was like, when I realized that there was going to be a massive overrun, I hate the overruns because I just can't predict what's going to happen. Yeah. Like if somebody said to me, there's going to be a 13 minute overrun, I could cope with it better than just being like, this show could end at any time. It makes me crazy.
Right. It's like, this could be the last episode of Dynamite because this episode will never end.
This one really fell down. Yeah.
Into a 24/7, 7 days a week, 365 days a year wrestling all the time.
And this match, like I had, because we had been like, oh shoot, like that main event is going to be killer. Like I checked out on it like before, Sorry. That match is going to kill me.
Yes, there you go.
Murder me.
This match is a killer.
Yeah. A vibe killer. So I checked out on the match like before Dynamite started. So I looked up probably 15 minutes into this match. I was like, wow, there's a lot of blood. I apparently wasn't watching at all.
I had good experience of the match in a way because I wasn't really watching it. And then I also looked up and said, oh my God, there's so much blood, free bleeding. And then I said, I have to buy new period underwear. And then I started shopping for new period underwear. And that's an audience that Tony isn't thinking about very much. You know,
they could really be doing some targeted advertising when they go to commercial.
I was quite susceptible in that moment. Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's a joke Toni Storm needs to make at some point.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Okay, so they're in the cage. They're in the cage together, and it is everything that Mox has ever wanted, sexually and romantically. And they're fighting. And then we kind of knew it was coming. We get a big fuck finish. I have to say I didn't follow that clearly, so Claudio tries to climb into the cage.
Which, let's focus there for a minute, because to me, this was the complete highlight of the night. So, Claudio, you know, tall, lanky.
I know him.
Kind of throws himself against the edge, and it kind of has, like, the vibe. Do you know, like, the toys that are, like, made of, like, some kind of, like,
the
weird
sticky?
Slimy gelatin? Yes.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
yeah,
you
yeah.
throw it against the wall and it sticks.
Oh, yeah.
That was kind of the vibe that he had, that he was like a little lizard that was stuck to the side and he was about to shimmy his way up. And I was so excited. And then Willow and Hobbs grabbed him and just pulled him off when my cat is trying to climb something they're not supposed to climb and I'm like down from there and pick them up by the ruff. That is what Willow and Hobbs did to Claudio. And I was like, this is the most humiliating thing that's ever happened to Claudio.
Wow. It's like when we described Adam Copeland as your cat that you're trying to clean his butt in the bath. Like, oh, yeah. I love visiting indignities upon these men. So he gets yanked off. Yuta's trying to get involved. He gets powerbombed through a table. A man shows up and slips a briefcase into the cage. I don't know how the gap in the cage came to be there. I don't know how the briefcase entered the cage, really. But does it matter? No. So the man turned out to be Gabe Kidd.
Which I recognized on site because I had just seen him. So, Allie, you posted, who is that man? And I was like, it's Gabe Kidd. I know him. I just saw him.
I know him. And Mox won by knocking Samoa Joe out with the briefcase. Okay. And then, actually, no, let's just briefly, okay, what is the order in which these things happened? I guess I was going to say earlier that I was having a bit of a rough one, so we might have more moments than usual where I'm trying to figure out what's going on, which everyone's going to love. Okay, so he takes out Hobbs, and then he's celebrating with Mox. So Gabe Kidd is celebrating with Mox, and then the Young Bucks come out, and they also want to celebrate with Mox. But then Kenny Omega comes out, and he's not dressed like Laundry Day for once. He's wearing pants.
Yep.
And he looked energetic, which
he was hyped.
Really
he
excited came me.
Running out. He hopped into the ring. He was full of energy. And I said, did someone not enjoy people saying, why are you quiet quitting?
Maybe it was just because he had a friend from New Japan there. He was like, oh, from the place I actually want to be. So he comes out. He's brawling with Claudio. Okada comes out. He's wearing his, what do you call this jacket?
The talking head suit jacket. Yeah.
He's wearing the talking head suit jacket again. It looks somehow bigger. If you told me that he had a series of five of these and he was working his way up like bigger and bigger and bigger, I would buy it and I would love it.
Maybe it's a prank the Elite are playing on him where they sew like an extra strip of fabric down the back like every week. He hasn't noticed yet. It's like, it seems looser, but
those tricksy seamstresses. So anyway, everyone's fighting. There's a whole thing. Okada's attacking Kenny. Does Matt bring the cage back down? Someone is like, get this cage back down. Here was Matt.
Yeah. Yeah. He had a very comedically large remote in his hand, and he was doing it like in his mind. He wanted to be like beep boop beep beep beep.
So he brings the cage back down, so all the men are trapped in the cage, which I think is really fun and funny.
Like, oh yeah, it's very just funny. Like,
ultimately, none of them are going to want to be in there. And so then they're all fighting some more, and then now how did they? Oh, Swerve came out. Oh, so Swerve comes out.
Yeah, I think at this point there was just like Kenny and Samoa Joe were the only two like
in the cage.
Good guys.
Yeah.
No, they were the only two good guys in the cage, and then the bad guys were all kicking their asses.
That makes a lot of sense. I got really concerned because I was like, okay, well then I've really misdescribed one. Yes, you're right. They're very outnumbered. So then Swerve runs out. He successfully scales the cage. Mm-hmm. Leaps into the cage, extremely cool. And the second he's in there, Matt is like, I've made a huge mistake.
He's like, go up.
And that's how he won his 977th Mommy's Little Ham Award. Yeah. Congratulations.
Congratulations, Matt Jackson. Looked good doing it as well.
And looked good. Looked amazing doing it.
Please accept your 3 millionth award on your boobs.
You know, it's like there's a limited number of times you can say, like, thank God I saw boobs this week. Thank God, like, a man came out in a super low-cut V-neck this week. But it's like, I'm thinking it. Every single time it happens, I'm like, God is good. Thank God, finally, God is good. Okay, so then Swerve eventually gets on the mic and is like, I've had it with all the motherfucking snakes on this motherfucking plane. It's time to have a little anarchy in the arena, and I know everyone's going to love to do it. And then he actually did quite a funny, there were so many people around that he was going like, I think these men and this woman and these men and this woman. It was just like, yeah, everyone is here. Let's just cover our bases. Just everyone who's here, you might be invited to anarchy in the arena.
And I think before he even said anarchy in the arena, it was like, and I think we're going to have a little bit of anarchy. And it was like the first time someone said snakes on a plane in the text of the movie, you know?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And the crowd loved it. The crowd immediately was like, that's exactly what we wanted to hear. We wanted a tease of the title.
Speaking of snakes on a plane, this is a related story, even though it's not going to seem like it. When I was like 20, I went to go see Cobra Starship, and I went with a group of people, and you had to buy your tickets online. I believe you had to like email this like youth rec center in order to get tickets to go see Cobra Starship. They had a clipboard, and so our friend Rachel had bought it, and so he was like, Rachel, 8? And she was like, yeah, these 8 are with me, and she pointed to 12 people. all 12 of us got in because this rec center was not like trying that hard. And that was the vibe where it was like, all 8 of you are going to go into the Anarchy in the Arena.
It's just everyone looking match. Around like on their fingers like 1, 2, 3. Okay, well, we'll figure this out backstage. Like, we'll definitely. I love the. It's like at a youth rec center. Yeah. Like someone is looking at that group and just being like, well, what am I going to do? Say no? I guess. Like, get in there.
I'm getting paid a minimum wage. I'm not going to count you.
We don't have a bouncer. So.
That's basically the refs about cage matches, too.
Pretty like, much.
What am I going to do? Stop you?
Okay, so our Anarchy in the Arena, as I understand it, now I wish that I'd written all of it down, but I believe what we have is, so we have the ops, Samoa Joe, Will Hobbs, Willow, God, and they just teamed up with Swerve and Kenny. We're up to 5, but I think we just have at least 2 more. Or do we?
I don't know. There's like a lot. There's a lot of people on the other side, so it's clearly not everybody's getting into the Anarchy.
For some reason, I thought I had done that. Go ahead, Ian.
Oh, I was just gonna say, like, it wasn't real clear to me if like Gabe Kidd and Judah are gonna be in there, or like just one of them, or
Gabe Kidd and who?
Judah.
Oh, Judah. For some reason, I guess. Okay, let's back off of this point. Which, again, I wish I'd figured out what I thought before we got on the mic. Leah, talk to us about Gabe Kidd.
I will say that I think that there was having, from the lofty place of having watched the New Japan pay-per-view, there's a large continuity error that I think I would like to raise to the attention of the people responsible.
Okay. And to us. So, yeah.
Last week, they went into the Death Riders locker room, and the Death Riders were waiting for them to arrange something.
Yeah,
the Bucks did. This week, when they came out, they shook hands with Mox to be like, job well done. Clearly, yes. The job was getting Gabe Kidd.
I guess. I feel like any man could have done what he did.
Sure. But the event in between was them fighting Gabe Kidd at New Japan. Now, you still could have made this work because after the match, there could have been a moment where it was like the Bucks were like, great work. Do you want to take a job? You know what I mean? But instead, the actual story of the match was the Young Bucks and the Good Brothers and whoever else was in that match, I forget, tried to like give a too sweet to the War Dogs, which included Gabe Kidd, and they walked away. And so I was sort of like, well,
who won the match?
That doesn't really make sense, huh?
Who won the match?
The Bucks did.
Oh, the Bucks did. Well, maybe it's just like that classic wrestling thing where it's like people are always like performatively being like, I hate you. And then moments later being like, actually, we're on the same team. That was just a fun little skit that we were doing. And it's like, for whose benefit?
Yeah, for that's the thing.
Benefit for whose benefit was the skit?
Yeah. Especially because like Gabe Kidd, when he was doing, do you remember when he did the Kenny match? He got big trouble. Well, who knows how much trouble? Maybe kayfabe trouble.
Oh, he was mean to
for being on Twitter. Yeah, being mean to TK and AEW on Twitter. So you do think like having Gabe Kidd do this like match wouldn't be like a problem, but you probably would want to do a couple things to make it all add up.
Yeah. Well, and honestly, like I'm still not fully clear on what's going on between the Bucks and the Death Riders. Like when all these people kept running out, I was like, I really hope someone's going to jump on the mic and sort of like clarify what all the dynamics are. Cause there's like 10 different small groups here that all seem to have like really complicated relationships with each other. And no one really did that. So
I would have thought that the handshake would have been clarifying if there was a moment between the Bucks and Gabe Kidd after the pay-per-view like match, like if there was a moment where it was
like
clear,
I see you, well
yeah
done.
I see you,
great,
like,
skit.
Yeah, like if the Bucks put their arm around Gabe Kidd and was like, come backstage with us, like we have a something to, you know what I mean, like okay, I made that sound
we're
sultry.
In the market for a middleman. It's like you have two actually, calm down.
Do you like standing between two beautiful
you
men?
You straight up have two men on the hook right now. You must be calm, leave something for everybody else.
But even if they did that, they should still like do it on AEW TV. Just a little. I'm not asking for much. Yeah. Just a couple sentences.
I'm willing to give them till next week. I will say I did not follow a lot of it. I did not follow it.
And well, girls, maybe you should consider watching New Japan pay-per-views like me.
Okay, maybe some cheaters on this podcast should keep their opinions to themselves.
It honestly seemed like that would make it more confusing, so...
Yeah, that's right. They complicated your experience. I usually, I do like, I don't have an objection to, like, lots of little feuds that somehow are turning into teams, but where even within the teams, it's like, I guess I'm aligned with you, but, like, I actually don't really care about, like, I have a specific thing that I'm worried about over there. I don't think all those specific things are totally clear, and I'm not really sure. It's not helped by the fact that it's like, what does Mox want at this point?
Right.
Not really any idea, so what do the Bucks want from aligning from with him? Maybe not to get beaten up by him. That tracks.
Yeah.
But
sure.
I think we're missing some pieces.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it is straight up comedy to be like, my title run is going so badly that I need to align with someone who will rescue it. It's the Young Bucks who are God's most perfect idiots.
And it's like, I don't think, I actually don't, I keep, I'm not confident about this, but when I think about Mox's movement from like Young Bucks come back and he's like, get out of my face, I can't be dealing with you right now. And then 3 weeks later, he's in their dressing room being like, I guess we could talk. It's like, what happened for you that like pushed the envelope? Because
I guess it was losing the trios belts where they were, he was like, all right, well, I really hit bottom over here.
So why not? Why not align with the Young Bucks? Maybe I could be their middleman. Maybe he's dreaming of being their middleman.
The last time he was their middleman, they kicked his ass.
Yeah. Well, that's
he's already been loved and betrayed, but he's coming back for more.
Everyone comes back for more. I think canonically, no one has ever failed to come back for more of that sweet, sweet loving. It's like, what do these chicks have? Beer flavored nipples? Okay, well, we'll see what happens.
It's true. And part of the thing, too, is, like, I always enjoy Anarchy in the Arena, but making it a yearly event means you kind of have to, like, force some pieces into place that might not organically really go there. So.
Yeah. I think it's, like, I really love, listen, it's problematic. I really love Anarchy in the Arena. So I'm kind of like, yeah, I don't really mind if they force some pieces. It is funny, though. It is funny for it to be really different configurations of Mox and the Elite every single year doing Anarchy in the Arena. And it's like, well, they do fucking rock at it. They are so good at doing Anarchy in the Arena. They've never failed to excite me. It's always a highlight of my wrestling year. Is it funny and perhaps a problem? Yes. Like, I'm not going to argue that. I'm not going to argue that. But I'm fairly certain I'll enjoy it.
Year 10, they're going to be like, and Mox, we found ourselves here again. And doing the Anarchy.
It's like, how do we always end up here? And I felt good about it. Well, actually, I felt two things. One, I was like, I wonder if it was really clear that this is where it was heading, and I'm the idiot for not having realized that's where it was heading. But then I was like, no, I feel good about myself for being like, if it's the Ops versus the Death Riders, who's going to plan the match? And then it's like, oh, yeah, they got the Elite in there.
they got the Elite in there, and they're really rescue that, so...
So that's good. So that's good from the perspective of me enjoying the match. That's probably pretty good because I wasn't sure what Samoa Joe and Mox at the helm were gonna come up. We're gonna come up with. Little ancillary middleman stuff here. Ricochet got in a fight with a man named Zach Gowen on Collision. Zach Gowen has a prosthetic leg. Ricochet, extremely bad boy, stole the leg. And then on Dynamite, he came out with the leg, and Zach Gowen came out to fight him and didn't have his prosthetic leg, so he had to come out on only one leg and then fought the whole match.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. On one leg. And
that was crazy.
It was crazy.
Moments of this where I was just like, what is happening to me? Like, what? Like, where it's like you're just galaxy braining, like, but it's just like wrestling in bigger and bigger letters of like, what is this? You know,
I had fun, and I definitely enjoyed it, but it was, I did hit a moment where I was like, this is kind of what I thought wrestling was before I started watching wrestling. You know, like, I was
that's
like,
interesting. I could never have imagined what I saw. For one man to have stolen another man's leg, and then the certain points, the leg's getting stolen, I mean, reclaimed by its rightful owner, and then Ricochet is getting beaten up with the leg that he stole. I could never have imagined it.
Yeah.
To
yeah.
me, it definitely, it belonged in a tent, and somebody, like, selling true. Frantic tickets at the opening of the tent, and, you know, like, near, like, right next door is, like, a bunch of giraffes. Like, to me, that's what this I match see. Was.
You say this is OG carnival stuff.
Yeah.
I was talking to my mom on the phone today when I was walking the dog, and she was like, oh, how was wrestling last night? And I said, well, I watched a one-legged man get his prosthetic leg stolen, and she gasped out loud. She was like, they did what? It's like, I know. It's wild. It's a
but
wild
it's okay.
Thing to watch.
It's okay. In the world of wrestling,
it was consensual.
It's yeah. all okay. It's consensual.
In the world of wrestling, we were honoring the one-legged man.
The one-legged man brought his family there to watch it.
Yes. It was a big deal, big opportunity.
When I got to say, in terms of feats of strength and agility, I did spend the whole match just like,
oh, it was crazy.
The fuck?
Yeah, he was absolutely. So cool. I was like, this is one of the coolest things I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was amazing. He was, wow. Yeah, so I had a great time. Ricochet, you're a wonderful heel.
Yeah, he's doing fantastic heel work. Like, I was watching the collisions like stuff when he stole the leg, and I knew it was coming, and it was still crazy to me that he just wandered over to the crowd and he was like, "And there's legends here, like this man," and then just started attacking him. And I was like, "You are really selling this."
Yeah, perfect energy.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was really funny, too, because he, you know, he was beating him up, taking his leg, and then he kind of held him down and cut some of his hair. And I was like, wrestlers really, that's a weird thing to do in a fist fight, you know, just cut someone's hair aggressively.
I was wondering about that. Was in your notes, and I did not get a chance to watch this segment. So I was like, now what happened there? What?
Yeah.
Ricochet have his huge scissors, his really big guys? Or just normal small?
I think it was just smaller ones.
That's
but
good that he has. It's good. It's very important to have an array of scissors for different needs and situations.
But he really grabbed a fistful of hair and then just hacked at it. So I was like, I was like, this poor man's beautiful hair is just being hacked at. Like, I hope he's going to enjoy his buzz cut.
That's probably the number one reason that I couldn't be a wrestler. It's probably the main reason I couldn't be a wrestler is that it would just be like, do not. I don't even want to hear you suggesting that you do anything to my hair.
Everything else is green lights, but if you touch your hair, no. Yeah.
Someone sits down and they're like, Allie, how about a hair versus career match? You're like, I will walk.
How about you storm fucking out. Die? Okay, let's move on to Josh Alexander and Kensuke Takeshita squashed Evil Uno and Alex Reynolds on Collision, presumably baiting Hangman ahead of his own Callis Family Showdown later the next week on Dynamite. They had come up. I thought it worked that they had come up in Will Ospreay's promo, so then you use them. But then on another level, it's like, did it work? Because we haven't gotten to really follow up on that relationship. I don't think I've seen them on good terms in quite a while, so whatever. Yeah. Little Greggy also returned to the ring in an 8-man with, it was the Don Callis family versus AR Fox, Bandito, and the Outrunners. And I think the only noteworthy thing is this screen cap that I took of Greg. And he's really been working on his bad guy faces. Do you not agree?
Yeah.
That's great work. Yeah,
it's really great work.
Looks so mad.
I hope he practices those in front of the mirror. Did you guys see that we got an answer on the Josh Alexander eyebrow issue? Well, two answers, really. And you share yours, and then I'll share mine.
I did absolutely crack up because I saw that there was a still, and then I saw that you posted a zoomed in still to be like, finally, we get answers to our eyebrow question. Not one person responded. You reacted in any way.
No one reacted.
No one wanted to acknowledge Eyebrowgate.
It's like some people don't even care about this issue.
It's like they think the IWC as a whole hasn't been riveted by this question.
And tell us about your investigative reporting on this issue.
Yeah, so I did a little Google that said, does Josh Alexander wrestler have eyebrows? Right. And then, you know, like the AI overview comes up at the top against your will. Yep. And AI said to me, yes, Josh Alexander has, the wrestler has eyebrows. He is a professional wrestler and his appearance includes eyebrows, according to multiple sources. And then if you click the link on the according to multiple sources, it goes to Wikipedia, which has no mention of my eyebrows.
The vibe was like, yeah, and he has eyebrows. He also has elbows too. What are we doing here?
He's a professional wrestler. It's in your question.
I just loved it. It's like, it is, it's just like such a perfect encapsulation of like, this is why AI isn't actually useful. It's just like, well, most men do. And like, yeah, most, not all. And it's never been mentioned on the Wrestling Observer Radio.
Not, well, I didn't find one source discussing the eyebrow issue, which just goes to show you that the wrestling media is cooked.
And to be clear, the man doesn't have eyebrows.
Well,
this
doesn't.
Is an issue.
Teeny,
it's not like
teeny
we're making
little,
this up. The
so
man,
small. Yes. He's got the in, he's
wispy
got
blonde-ish. Kind of.
Yeah. It's like if you imagine an eyebrow as a, like a kind of a classic child's angry eyebrow of a triangle, he's got one side of it, very small and very pale.
Yeah.
He's a silly looking guy.
He is.
Why is Dave Meltzer not being out there being like, if you want to be a star, you have to have eyebrows?
Yeah, draw them on. We
at
have
WWE,
the technology.
They have eyebrows.
They've got
line
eyebrows.
Goes up.
Everyone. I don't know. Dave just isn't doing the reporting he used to. I'm sure he used to talk about the eyebrows a lot, but, you know.
Yeah.
Time makes you bolder.
I'm sure it was his main preoccupation, for sure. Yeah.
Dave used to be the source for eyebrow information in the IWC, yeah. But now you're never going to hear shit about it.
He's
who's
really
in his flipped. Ear telling him not to talk about
it? Yeah, he talks to Triple H and all of a sudden eyebrows aren't an issue anymore. Yeah, okay.
Really makes you think.
It just seems like he believes whoever talked to him last on the eyebrow issue, you know?
Yeah,
he's always getting a lot of it's like literally 24/7 back and forth different wrestlers being like, bring up the eyebrows, Dave, if you mention eyebrows on this show I'll never you talk know, to you again.
On the most recent show I think Brian Alvarez tried to bring it up but Dave interrupted him and started talking about
talk about it
the history
I've actually got
of
some
eyebrows
papers on that. I've got some papers.
And you know what the most disappointing thing is, that on the radio he never brings up on the eyebrow issue, but on Twitter
so
he's out there
yeah.
legislating eyebrow issues.
Constantly.
And it's like, what do I
Twitter
pay
Dave
for
built different.
What do I pay for?
Built different. I'd rather get it for free. What he's giving you for know, free, that's the milk I want.
The fact that we can make this level of insider jokes
total
is actually
brain space.
Our... Yeah. It's actually to our detriment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Of course it's... if you actually sit back and think about it, it's like, God, I gotta rethink some stuff. All right. Dynamite then opened with Ospreay and Hangman versus Josh Alexander and Takeshita. The match was characterized by some tag intention between Ospreay and Hangman. By tag intention, I mean men not wanting to tag each other in for various reasons that I wasn't always tracking. I'll admit that. I
was telling Cloud stories about it, but I can't promise that what I felt was what Ospreay intended.
Ospreay, I think he was really doing some acting on Dynamite. Like clearly he was like, I've come here to tell a story. And yet because of his track record, I did keep saying, what story? Now, and I understood that he was like selling a certain amount of tension, but there were a lot of moments where I was like, I'm not sure if I'm supposed to be on like one of their sides more than the other right now. Mm. Like,
true.
Anyway, okay. He made Hangman smile. That was fun. He helped him get his beautiful smile back again.
We all saw you smile again.
We all saw you smile again. And that's the face we love.
And Hangman said, I was looking at your hair.
I was laughing at you. Well, as you bring it up, Anne, you want to talk about what was going on with Ospreay's appearance after he got slammed by Big Dave and the entire IWC last week? How did he follow up?
I don't know. Well, I will say he wore his fun robe with the hood up, so he did look more like a star. But
I love when he's Dark Kermit.
Oh, yeah. Dark Kermit is our star look, I think we can all agree.
Yeah.
But we had kind of a back of the hair, like a business in the back, straight situation, and then like a curly in the front, party in the front situation with his hair.
Yeah.
Which was confusing.
I think to me that what that says is straighten the hair and then wash your face a couple days in a row. Mm. You know? Yeah. And so the front bangs, of course, they're getting their curl back, and the back is still nice and oily and flat.
Do you think we could send, like, the men, male wrestlers, like, send them to kind of grooming courses? Because, like, the women's hair always looks normal and good. Yeah. And the men's hair always looks insane.
Should we make that when we're operating our pumps for us and we've got them staying out back at the summer camp? I think it's like, of course, they're staying in tents, but I think the bathrooms will be really nice. And we'll be able to do some salon-style classes in there.
Yeah.
I love we'll teach the them idea. To braid. I love the idea that we've got our men in nylon tents, but when they troop off to the bathroom, it's fucking luxurious. Not a single drop of hard water to be seen.
That's because it's important that you be tough, sleep on the hard ground with Darby Allin yelling at you from outside the tent, but look amazing. Beauty is pain.
We're gonna have them conditioning each other's hair. We're gonna give notes on it. We're gonna be walking from salon station to salon station saying, okay, Osprey, like, pretty good, like, let's not rinse all of it out because we want him to have that great moisture.
First day of camp, you're getting a hair buddy, and you two have each other's backs for the rest of the summer. You two are gonna help each other develop hair routines,
and we're gonna match them based on
hair type. Yeah.
But let's get a little scary about it, where we give a talk where we're like, hey, if your partner shows up for their match and their hair is dog shit, you both end up doing dishwashing, you know, that week. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we're like, you sink together, like, you live together, you die together.
Okay, I think some great ideas here, girls, but no one has been to camp yet. So we're not seeing the level of hair care that I think after a summer under our tutelage they would have in Will Ospreay right now. That's fair to say.
No.
Okay. So then there's a whole thing at the end of this match where it's like, and this I didn't quite follow, but I'm not sure why. So I guess Hangman's trying to set up for them to do like some double finisher that combines their finishers, which is very romantic. He's a romantic man. And Will Ospreay, never having had a real friend, like, I've never heard of that, and it seems like an attack on me. So he's briefly really mad, and then eventually they kind of, and he like almost Hidden Blades Hangman. This is really cool to watch someone
stop their body that close to someone else's body. I really think it's got to be way harder to almost hit somebody than it is to like just normal punch somebody in the face.
Yeah, seriously.
I agree. It seems like you'd have to have a lot more control at the very least. Yeah. They did ultimately hit the double finisher. That's what the recap says. That's definitely written by fucking AI. But when I was watching it, I thought that Hangman had stolen the finish and that Ospreay was sulking about it afterwards and was like, it seems like I didn't play a very big role in that conclusion. So I think that might be on me. It just like didn't really look like he connected that much.
Yeah, it's crazy. I think they didn't. No, I think you're right.
Okay. Well, Ospreay and Hangman exchanged some loaded looks about it. Then Bryce raised their little hands, and then they did some celebratory, like, bosom heaving at each other, like, when I get my hands on you and I don't have to be on a team with you. And then they got attacked again by the Don Callis family, and they had a little incident where Hangman came up behind Ospreay, and Ospreay mistook Hangman for Josh Alexander and slugged him, and Hangman really didn't like that and shouted at him quite a bit. And then Bryce had to get between them and be like, guys, guys, you have each other, double or nothing. Don't touch now. And then Ospreay left. The end. Thoughts on the dynamic?
They finally reached some eroticism with the kissing pose and the heaving bosoms. Did. Like, Ospreay suddenly got activated into it last week with MJF, but at least we can carry it over to better people.
Well, I was fascinated by what was going on with Ospreay, and I could only cloud story about it. So it's not that I think that he was trying to do this, but you know how like men just get weird around Hangman? Yeah. And it's like no man really operates in any normal way. They just immediately
Even the fans are trying.
Yeah, yeah, it's very true. It just felt like every other man we've seen Ospreay interact with so far has either been like, can we be best friends or do you want to have a killer fight? And with Hangman, he got so weird where he was like peacocking and he was like, acknowledge how cool I am. Acknowledge how cool I am. I'm such a good wrestler. Hangman, are you looking? I think you're probably going to do evil stuff because you're so hot and you're making me feel weird. And I think it's probably evil the way that you are.
Stop. How else could you be making me have these feelings in my stomach? If not with a curse, if not with a witch's curse.
And I feel like all of his behaviors in that match could easily be explained by him having his first erotic feeling for a man.
I straight up thought you were going to say his first erection and was like, yeah, even for this podcast. It's a bit much.
No, I'm standing behind it now. That was the first time.
An amazing new cloud story from the girls at Tunnel Talk, which is that what was happening in this match was that Ospreay got his first erection.
And yet, wouldn't the match have made more sense if you put on that lens?
Yeah.
Jeremy and Josh, this is what you're missing.
Oh my god. Yeah, I don't know. I think I'm really not complaining because I'm not saying like none of this made any sense. Like I think it made sense, except that the problem with Hangman storylines at this point, and this is the real issue. It's like when you've pulled the football away enough times and like not done follow up on someone who's really good at storytelling, or like you just don't trust yourself to follow their stories anymore sometimes. So it's like with Ospreay and Hangman, I'm kind of like, I don't really know exactly what about this dynamic to keep an eye on, kind of.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if there's something that, like, more than what we're saying that I should be seeing that I'm, like, not, or I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it is just, like, big picture, like, where are we going and what's happening and what is Ospreay trying to do? Yeah. Yeah, I feel very, like, well, we'll see, I guess. I don't know.
It's not, it's like they could be, we could get 3 weeks from now and it could be like, right. Wow, they really did set that up exactly right. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Set up what? I don't know. That's the thing I don't know. Okay. I know we don't want to get into it, but I think we must talk about it a little bit. Is that, do you consent, girls? Because
it was 47% of the show.
47% of the show.
What are we supposed to do?
We're going to break the streak that we've had.
Breaking our silence.
We've been successfully ignoring the shit out of this plotline and living in our peace about it.
Mm-hmm. That's what they hate the most. That's why it keeps getting more and more screen time. It's like, why won't the girls talk about it? Because we hate you. Because we fucking hate you.
And every time I was like, well, at least we're through that segment of the show, they'd have another fucking segment.
If it were a storyline that I just, like, didn't care about, it would have reached the point where I was like, no, this is funny now. It's funny. Yeah. But because I actively am angry at them, it was still kind of funny. But so the Hurt People got 3 or 4 segments on Dynamite. It was quite a few segments and very long. So first, MJF was having an interview backstage with Renee, just about joining the Hurt People, I guess. And the Hurt People interrupted to kind of menace him and be like, meet us in the ring later for your final verdict. And so it's already just like, I don't know. You could just knock this out in an email. Doesn't have to get covered on the show. So then the Hurt People fought Top Flight and really destroyed them, which was just really sad. Like, it was just like, I don't know.
It pissed me off because it was it was like barely more than a squash. And I was like, you should respect Top Flight. Like, I know that they're just guys, but there are little guys. They've been here for a long time and they're sweet. And how would, like, that's just disrespectful. Give them a real match, you assholes.
And like, they are good. It's just like the Hurt People are just like continuing the destruction of the tag division that has
that FTR started.
Years. Yeah, exactly.
It's like, I don't understand how we apparently only have one tag team, adult tag team, not any of our children, that has any interest in like building up the tag team division. Every other tag team that gets those titles is like, great. And now I can't wait to squash everybody else and make tag team wrestling look like I'm the only person who can do it and everyone else who does it is so stupid.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like, hey guys, to put on a good tag team wrestling match, you have to have two teams. Like, leave a team at the company besides yourselves.
It fucking sucks.
Is it the WWE thing where the Hurt Syndicate won't respect another team that wasn't on WWE?
Maybe.
I mean, it's hard to say. Like, hey,
I think they maybe don't even like tag team wrestling. I don't really know. That's the other WWE thing, isn't it? Yeah. Is that it's like tag team wrestling itself is not really respected over there. So,
yeah, and sometimes I feel like we blame like ex-WWE people for being selfish, but then it's like MJF is like
very You're right. We have a homegrown
more time
selfish
than anybody. So I don't know that it's like you can blame one place.
That's true. We have to. There's enough blame to go around. All right, so they beat up Top Flight. And then we get, I would say this was approximately a 70-minute segment in which, once again, they have to go find MJF. And he's like hiding behind Tony Khan and Jerry Lynn. And I'm really excited. I just keep saying, that's Jerry Lynn. And nobody actually congratulated me. Like, not even one person congratulated me.
We did, because it's like, Allie, of course we all know Jerry Lynn.
Yeah, well, like, congratulate yourselves too. Aren't you surprised? We all know Jerry Lynn. We all know Jerry Lynn. Isn't that exciting? Don't you think that's cool? I couldn't believe.
We've come so far.
This is totally unrelated. Except insofar as it's about the concept of old men in wrestling. Anne, was it you who last week... It was one of you, came into our little channel and said, hey, did you guys know that Pat McAfee isn't old?
That was me.
It was Leah, because I actually Googled him when we watched that WWE pay-per-view, and I was shocked to find out that he's only in his 30s.
I thought he was 80. I don't know. I just thought Pat was an old name. So I immediately was like, and he's 80. And I think also because...
It's Randy Orton all over again.
Right.
Yeah.
The number of... Like, in my mind, Randy Orton and Pat McAfee are both at least 10 to 20 years older than Jerry Lynn. And so it's funny, every time they both came up on ONR this week, and I was just like, the old men, and then like self-correcting, like, the young men, 30s, 40s, probably, or 80, 85, 90.
I thought
Pat McAfee's... He spent a long time on that pay-per-view that we watched, like, reminiscing about his good old days playing football. Like, a long
we
time.
Saw
like,
that.
20 minutes.
Oh,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, because that's why I Googled him, because I was like, what the fuck? Like, why is this old man talking to me about, like, 1950s football or something? But it was from, 10 years ago.
Did you play the Harvard-Yale game? For some reason, in my mind, I'm like, that's the only football that was getting played in the 1950s was the Harvard-Yale
game. And that game still takes place, too, so...
Just like Pat McAfee is still alive, despite having played in that game in the year 1952. Yeah.
I straight up thought he was WWE's Jim Ross. I mean, I know Jim Ross came from WWE, but I thought that was the thing. And so I was this whole time, every time someone's like, and Pat McAfee did this, and I was like, and that he limped out there, and I was like,
I do just imagine
Slobberknocker,
like an old timey radio announcer for sure. Anyway, why did I think that was relevant? What are we talking about?
Jerry Lynn.
Jerry
and how
Lynn.
We can recognize old men now.
He honestly looks kind of young compared to Pat McAfee.
Yeah, of course, when you compare him to Randy Orton, you're like, wow, this is a spring chicken.
Okay, I accept that you guys were just like, yeah, Allie, we know about Jerry Lynn too. But like, aren't you like, for all of us, aren't you like, that's crazy?
Just, yeah, of like, course I'm
never
troubled.
I've seen that man wrestle. Not even once.
No, not even
one
time.
Not even one time.
I could not tell you one feud that man was ever in.
I haven't even seen him come out and do some kind of gun spot from the apron. Okay?
So true. Don't know what kind of gear he wore.
Nope.
Could have been anything.
But I know his face and his name. Anyway, he's hanging out back there with Tony Khan. MJF's hiding behind them. I get scared. He gets hauled out to the ring. Everyone votes on him. Takes about 70 minutes. Very long.
At least.
The amount of time that you're just sitting there watching the thumb go neither up nor down and hover in the middle, it was just like, this isn't good TV.
You're like, I've already seen this segment like
a lot of
20
times.
To 30 times probably. Like,
if you took all of the footage that we have of someone from the Hurt People's thumb not doing anything, what do you think it would add up to? How many minutes?
50. Easily. Just the thumb.
It might be the only thing we've actually seen on AEW TV for the past year.
Yeah, certainly more time than any of the women have gotten, I'll tell you that much.
Correct.
Yeah.
So they do vote him in eventually, and then he's really excited for some reason.
Yeah, still don't know why. Like, they've spent so much time on the storyline, but it's, like, the same nothing. Like, they have no story to it. Like, I literally don't know why he wants to be in this group.
You'd think they could have dropped a couple more, like, just a couple crumbs every week. Like, something. This is a good rule of thumb, everybody. Every week, we want to learn at least one thing we didn't know before.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to add up to the solution, but you have to give us one new thing to put on our string board that we're not keeping for the storyline because we hate it, but just in general. One new thing, at least. We've gotten zero new things. The only thing happening is, are we getting the thumbs? He gets the thumbs. Crazy. Then...
So something did progress, and yet it somehow felt like we'd watched the exact same segment for the millionth time.
Yeah.
Crazy.
The... We're in the car. The car's not moving. The scenery is moving behind us. It's 1952. We're at the Harvard-Yale game. So then, and I can't say I tracked this very closely. Dustin Rhodes and Sammy Guevara come out. Sammy Guevara is wearing a powder blue suit. And I said, genuinely, aw, Sammy.
I was so happy to see him.
It's a sign of a very unwell mind.
Mm-hmm. I actually thought, wow, they didn't let Sammy talk. Have I ever said that in my entire life?
I know. Sammy, the most likable person in this entire segment with like 10 men in it. Wow.
I'd love to know what's going on with him right now. What you thinking about, Sammy? How you doing? Yeah.
How's the baby, Sammy?
Oh, God, it really is how I felt. It was just like, hey, all of you shut up. Let's talk to Sammy. Let's see Sammy. Yeah. Which
Sammy, do you have any baby pictures you want to share? Let's put some
picks up on the screen, buddy, at this team meeting.
You know what? We are a small sample group, but it does make you think, like, maybe it was good that he went to ROH for all those months. It did something. It did something. It did something.
Can't say it did nothing.
Absence did make the heart grow much fonder. I said, that's just my little, that's just my bad little boy, Sammy. He can't do anything.
MJF? MJF, something to think about. Hurt people, something to think about.
God, if we could get them to ROH.
Oh my God, if we could get them to ROH, I'd be living.
Imagine if MJF willingly for several months went to ROH exclusively. I genuinely think he would die.
Surely you could sell him on it somehow. Like, it's like, if ROH gets a TV deal in those months, like, everyone will, it will be all on you, buddy. You will have been the one who got the deal.
It'll be like when Liz Lemon convinced Tracy that he was getting, like, the Japanese film award, and it was going to be broadcast, the award ceremony, and they're like, yeah, it's definitely going on TV. Like, yeah, MJF, ROH, it's going on the television. Like, don't worry.
It's like, all of these cameras are recording. Don't worry about that. God, that's the future liberals want in the biggest possible way.
I'm going to start manifesting it. Let's light some candles.
Yeah. Okay, so Sammy and Dustin are out there. Dustin's really upset. I actually have no idea why. I don't.
No.
Unfortunately, no.
Because he, unlike anybody else in this fucking company, was defending the tag division.
Oh, that's nice.
And he was like, what the fuck? Why don't you give people a chance? Why don't you do respectful things and fight tag teams like a normal people? I would have liked to hear that sentiment from anybody else. Why than Michigan J-Frog.
Respectful things? I'm upset with it. Hey, hurt people? Why don't you try doing respectful things to these like opening their car door and offering them your arm. Okay, so I like that. He's defending the honor of the tag team division. That's beautiful and romantic. And Sammy's there. And I wish he'd spoken. I'd love to have heard what was going on with him. And then crew come out. Now, can anyone...
So Michigan J-Frog says, and you know what? I'll teach you respect by fighting me. You'll give me a shot. Okay. And then crew came out and was like, we're in line first. And Dustin was like, you don't show respect either. I'm going first. And then they had the world's stupidest little fight, like little
paw spat fight,
where they were like, me.
It doesn't come off great to straight up be like, we're in line ahead of you. I know it is something that comes up fairly regularly, but something about when, and I love Leo Rush, but something about when he said it was just like, Leo, and to say that in that vest, like what's going on?
It was slightly Karen behavior.
It was. Like,
excuse me.
We've actually been waiting for, it's like, well, weren't you in line ahead of Top Flight? Like, why are they called crew? I've been scared to ask because I missed the moment where they got a name. Did anyone know?
I thought it was like a takeoff of Top Flight because it's like they're the flight crew, but then but I don't know if that's right. Don't make that face like I'm making sense.
I'm onboarding. Cloud story. What do you mean? Don't make that. Now it's onboarded. I'm
like, yeah. That's they were why being they mean name, to
Top
obviously.
Flight and being like, oh, Top Flight. Well, we're the crew, which is dumb, which is so stupid.
Extremely dumb. Yeah,
but it makes me. I like it. I'm like, oh, great. You did something really dumb. That's amazing. All right. So then they're all having a slap fight, and my takeaway was I was like, I guess they're all fighting at Double or Nothing or something. Does that seem like, or someone's fighting? Actually, I think I quoted a number of takeaways that were just me naming all of the different teams and the configurations in which they might be fighting within the next 3 weeks.
So I think the Hertz Syndicate are going to fight somebody, but it's one of those two teams. I think that the collision match this Saturday is the eliminator, so whoever wins on Saturday gets the Double or Nothing match.
Possible. Oh. I don't know why.
It's disgusting how many times I've answered questions because
this
it's
is what
Rose.
This is what I can't this is what happened from going on Kiss. Look at you now. Yeah. I barely recognize
you.
You've
brought a lot of facts to the table here today.
But only in this one segment. Now, what do you think that says about me? I didn't know anything else, but this one segment, I was like, let me explain it to you.
I don't think anyone could say what
Justin Rhodes said.
Or Michigan J. Frog. Please, Anne. Call him by his Christian name. His full Christian name.
I'm so sorry.
Okay. I don't know why I felt genuinely let down just now. I was like, oh, there's going to be an eliminator. He's only going to fight one of those. For some reason, I'm just like, they should have to deal with as many teams. Like, in my opinion, the Hurt People should have to be fighting off, like, 50 tag teams. Like, it should be, like, that scenario of, like, would you rather fight 12 small ducks or one man-sized duck? Like, it's like, they should have to fight 12 man-sized ducks, and they should die.
Yeah.
It's true, because you, like, look at these two teams, and you're like, oh, the Hurt Syndicate is going to squash one of them, like, if there's only one team, which is so depressing. Again, like, we have destroyed our whole tag division, so no one's even, like, a plausible contender.
And what's it going to do to your mental health if you have to watch Dustin Rhodes, an old dog, get fought by those guys? You're not going to be able to handle that.
No, you know I hate
I know you do, that's why I'm saying it. I'm looking out for you, my co-host. I'm saying she's not, Tony, please. She's not.
Not mentally fit.
Not mentally well.
She's the last of his kind. They'll be extinct.
Something about the phrasing get fought has just absolutely sent me to heaven. When Dustin Rhodes gets fought.
He's barely there. Oh my god. Okay, and then they're still, you might think, like, wow, they've been talking about this for a while. It's gotta be over.
Imagine living it.
Yeah, imagine you're just watching Dynamite and you had to, it just went on and on and on. By the way, I got something from Nielsen in the mail last week saying that I would be getting, like, fuller information to come.
Oh my god, amazing.
And I think it's in my mailbox right now, but I haven't picked it up. So
okay, well, let's pause this podcast. Let's get to it.
You know, I got a Nielsen thing a couple years ago. We were watching wrestling at the time, and they sent me, it was like a crisp $5 bill in there, being like, we'd love to get you to fill out this survey, and I forgot to do it. But I kept the bill. I didn't spend it. I was like, that's a precious bill.
This came from Nielsen.
From Mr. Nielsen himself. Mr. Nielsen, the numbers man.
The numbers? Where the numbers come from?
Five crisp new dollars?
And if they ask me to, like, write down, like, all the television I watched this week or whatever, I'm going to be like, I watched AEW Dynamite, except for the MJF and Hurt Syndicate.
I turned
sections.
It off.
Turned it off.
The Hurt People. See, and then I turned it back on.
If I continue to
after
see
quarter
them,
five was over, I turned it back on.
They will lose my eyeballs.
Yep. You're on thin ice.
The thinnest.
But when the Elite were on, I turned on two TVs.
Actually, every member of my household watched it. And there's a lot of us.
Some of them were already asleep. I was going around. I was banging my pots and pans. I said, get down here. Mommy's a little leader on TV. You
pops
get
off their shirts off. Everybody in here. I was waking up the people in the tents outside. I was bringing them in.
And I happened to overhear a little conversation. Someone said, hey, it's a commercial. Should we turn the channel? And then someone else said, no, I need to stay with the Young Bucks. I'll stay with it.
We wouldn't want to miss a second.
The commercial.
Yeah. We watched every commercial and we took notes on the commercials, actually. So
and
don't worry about that.
And we are out here saying things like, God, I wish they would advertise period underpants to us so I could buy some.
We really, yeah.
you don't like that. You think that maybe we need to pull back a little from that one. You might say, why?
Mr. Nielsen doesn't want to hear this.
It's like, I don't like what.
Mr. Nielsen's like, thanks for the essay, but we could have done without the period underwear, commercial.
Imagining him as like
feedback. Old, we don't really.
Old Mr. Scrooge, and he's like, stop talking to me about your underwear. I don't want to hear the term free bleeding from you. Oh, God. Okay, so you might say, how could this segment still be going? Okay. Everyone leaves somehow. I don't really know how or why. MJF leaves. They all leave. Later backstage, MJF encounters MVP, and MVP is like, got your contract right here. Give it a sign. And MJF said, I got to get my lawyer to look at it. We skipped this in previous weeks, but it's the second instance of a lawyer somehow being involved in as many weeks. MVP was...
Well, they've got to get an NDA signed because of the stuff they've done in these seconds in the past.
That aired live on television. And MJF was like, I got to have my lawyer look at it. And MVP was offended. And MJF was like, well, would you never sign a contract without having your lawyer look at it? And then MVP kind of agreed. And it seemed like it was a point of tension. And I said, what's happening?
I'll tell you for free. I didn't know this segment happened. I don't know where I was. I don't know what I was doing. I had no idea this segment happened. I found out. I was reading the Cage Side Seats recap this morning, and Manolo was like, why the fuck is there going to be a contract signing? And I said, there's going to be a contract signing?
Oh, yeah. This isn't over. Believe you me. It's going to be quite a while before he's officially in that.
I fucking hate it here. Suddenly, I really understand. I couldn't for a long time understand why people hated Better Than You, Bebe, when they were like, Adam Cole's just going to turn on MJF. And I was like, we're having fun. And now I'm like, was it as repulsive as how boring this is? It can't have always been.
I mean, I think
it wasn't at the time that we liked it. It was still kind of funny sometimes. And not offensive, actively.
It wasn't actively.
Well, that's importantly.
Usually. I don't understand why. I don't understand why this is happening. I don't understand why it takes so much time.
It they is had wild.
So for many segments.
Of contents? It's like you guys had like 60 seconds of content at best, and it went on for at least 20 minutes, if not 30.
I don't get it.
Crazy.
I don't get it. I don't like it. I haven't heard an apology from anybody for being fucking awful. I don't like these men. I don't want to see them anymore. But having said that, I'm sure they'll be on for an hour and a half next week.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it just keeps
It's like, you
escalating.
Might say, like, we have a couple pay-per-views to build. And it's just like, no, well, we actually need to see the Hurt Business and MJF do interminable segments for most of the show.
Yeah, that's what the people
that's
like.
That's how we're going to sell a pay-per-view.
And it really is like a recap, a redo of the Bloodline. And it's like, I saw clips when Sami Zayn was trying to get in the Bloodline, and those were funny and charming. So that's a key difference.
No one has laughed. I haven't seen a single segment from this where the whole point of the segment to me seems to be that everyone in the ring is on the verge of breaking. That's the only thing I want to see.
Which was the most charming part. I think everybody hated the Bloodline except for that one part that everyone, like that really enjoyable part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's like, what else can you say? Moving on. On Dynamite, we had the AEW Women's World Championship Eliminator. Toni Storm versus Azumi versus Mina Shirakawa versus Sky Blue. We now have custody of Mina. She has come to our promotion. I'm worried for my life.
You were really going through it that entire match.
I know.
Just kept going, I'm gay. I'm extremely gay.
I wasn't. Well, it's like every time I look at her, I'm like, it's one thing to be a pervert about men, but like, I really was just like, woof, This is internalized homophobia, I think, that I'm like, I can't be this perverted about a woman. You know? She looks so good. She's so beautiful and she's so cool and her whole look is cool. And she fights really. She's always hitting people and, you know. Wow, it's going to
be my girlfriend.
Be my girlfriend, you know? Or, you know, do whatever you want to do. Cuz I respect you.
Allie's like, I'm not being presumptuous about it.
I respect you. And I'm obsessed with you. What did you guys think of whatever happened with this theme song?
I didn't even notice it the first time. Yeah, she had a new dance. It was fine. And then the internet got really mad. And at first I thought it was funny that Tony immediately was like, guys, I already fixed it. But then I think after one of you was like, was she responded to complaints that easy? And then I got mad and didn't find it as easy.
I ruined it on Twitter too. Oh, sorry, Ann, you said it
to me. Yeah. No, I got mad about it because I was like, yeah, like some boys on the internet get mad about like the song not being the same. And he's like, oh, I already changed it. It's better in the next segment. But some women are like, well, you made me feel like shit. And he's like, great, they'll have more time next week.
He's just like, okay, I can't see it. I do not see it. It was like, my God, inequity in action.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When male nerds complain, they're immediately.
Male nerds are catered to and they don't even realize how much.
When I found out that the new song was driven, like Mina was participated in it and she recorded some of the track, I was sort of like, you fucking nerds are out. Like it was the exact same shit as the people who are like, Heyman did nothing wrong. Heyman's still a face. I'm like, Heyman is telling you that he wants to try an artistic thing. He wants to be a heel. And if you're telling him no, you're saying I refuse to appreciate your art. Mina's the same thing. She created an art for you and you're like, it was fine. There's nothing wrong with it.
Give it a chance.
It was unfamiliar. Fact, you got scared.
And I do think, right. I'm like, Tony Khan, don't be a fucking coward. If somebody is doing something new, you give it a couple weeks. See how it goes.
Yeah.
Whatever. Now, Leah, the show that you watched, Azumi beat Mercedes for the IWGP belt.
Yeah, well, so it was a three-way,
It
might have been a four-way.
Could have been another.
Either three or four. Azumi.
Okay, so you watched Mina, really closely.
Mercedes, shut up. No, I think it was a three-way. Yes, it was a three-way. Shut up. I'm
Should we phone a friend? Can we get one of your other co-hosts on the phone right now? Can we get Josh and Jeremy over here?
Josh, how many people were in that match? Quick. They're making fun of me. Josh.
Hey, Leah, do you think you would remember if Dustin Rhodes had been in the match?
It was a four-way. It was Azumi. It was Mercedes. There was another woman in it. Then it was Michigan J. Frog. Yeah.
No, it was three. So, Azumi. Okay, shut up. We're Googling this.
6.5 hours later.
So there was three people in this match.
God, was it even worth
no
watching?
No Dustin Rhodes.
So
everyone's legs were kind of proportionate to their body, unmemorably.
So your question was, did Mercedes get pinned? No.
I don't think Azumi that was my pinned.
Allie, I know you were asking, of course, who got the pin? Who was protected? What was the work rate?
You say, was it a clean win? Yeah, that's what I asked. Was it a clean win? No, I just want to know. The belt changed hands.
So Azumi pinned Mina. So Mina got pinned. So Mercedes didn't
get pinned?
No, she didn't make it into the ring in time to stop the pin.
Not
so
a clean
she
win.
Lost her belt. Right. She lost her belt without getting pinned. But she had the funniest reaction where she was just in the corner and she just sagged. And at first she was just looking really like forlorn and like sad. And then all of a sudden she just went, no. No! And then she just started screaming at the top of her lungs and just going, like, just in absolute disbelief. And then Mina came over to her and was like, this is your fucking fault. You suck ass. And Mercedes was screaming back at her. The two of them are screaming at each other. And then Mercedes gets out of the ring. Mina follows her and goes to chase her to start hitting her. Mercedes books it. Fucking runs for her life.
Hell yeah.
Full on scamper. It was so good. It was, like, honestly, it was a Mommy's Little Ham award contender.
Do you want her to have it this week? I kind of do. Within the halls of AEW, but maybe that's why we could justify giving out two.
Yeah.
I'd hate to take that cage stuff away from Matt, but should we give out?
I really maybe think she deserves it.
We have our Mommy's Little Ham Award, and we have our International Mommy's Little Ham Award.
And, or maybe we call it something like maybe the Intercontinental Mommy's Little Ham Award. Does that spark anything for you? Or the perhaps the All Atlantic Mommy's Little
Ham. Or maybe it's the Mama's Little Ham Award.
I love that. She
What's mommy in Japanese?
Yeah, get that for us.
That's mama, I guess.
The mama's little ham more. Yeah. Then that's what she has. Then that's what she shall have. Well, I love it. Feeling a little Moira Rose there. Then that's what she shall have. All right. Now what are we talking about? Oh, they had this four-way eliminator match. This fucked. This was very, very fun. Aside from my gay crisis, this was a blast. So Mina ended up winning this, which means that she's going to face Tony at Double or Nothing, because this was an eliminator match. We know all about those.
We know
about those. And so she's going to face Tony. And then the other match of, as everyone's leaving, because they've had a great match and they had a really wonderful time, so they're leaving to go backstage. And Azumi gets attacked by Mercedes, who's mad about the belt situation. And then Jamie Hayter comes out to save Azumi / fight with Mercedes. Mercedes and Jamie, of course, also going to fight at Double or Nothing in the final round of the women's Owen, with the winner to go on to fight Tony. And that was a lot of names I just said, and I think I got them all exactly where they had to be.
You did so good. You did so good.
What
incredible work.
Wonderful. Are you guys excited? I'm happy.
Yeah, I was like, thank God we've got like some horny matches for Double or Nothing. Like, Mina versus Tony is going to be great.
Mm-hmm. I think we could have taken 47% of the show and given it to these women.
Yeah, I agree.
And I'm not saying it's 47%, but...
No, but they did make some of the men look really mediocre, I thought, in this episode.
Yeah.
They rocked.
I appreciate that Mina had both incredible, like, entertaining chemistry with both Mercedes and Toni Storm. I'm like, that's what you need in a new recruit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she really came out and gave it her all. Okay, let's get to the real... I saved our treat for last, girls. On Collision, Danny Garcia fought Dax Harwood. You know, one member of NPR. in the main event. And Dax was in a really foul temper, and he was really beating up on Danny, and he was doing stuff like taking the padding off the turnbuckle and shoving his face into it and all that kind of deal. And the action moved out of the ring, and they're cruising the crowd, and they made it around to commentary, and Dax got distracted from wanting to murder Danny Garcia by his desire to kind of like violently, erotically engage with Nigel. I hate to say that about Dax, but I don't know. There's something charged about it. Like, there's a certain kind of like, anyway. And so he's baiting Nigel, being like, come fight me. It's like, you're in a match right now. and Nigel gets right up and he wants to be baited. And Tony Schiavone stands up too. And he starts saying, Nigel, do not do it.
And incredibly hornily, he said, remember what you told me.
Remember what you told me?
You told me not to do
Sit
this.
Sit down and put your headphones on. Which it was just like, okay, married. Sit down and put your headphones on. Do not, Nigel, do not. But Nigel just like couldn't, like he was like quivering, trying to restrain himself, basically. And Dax had hit him, and he had refrained, I think, in the moment. He was like kind of like trying to hold off. Mm-hmm. Dax and Danny get back in the ring, and Dax is being an absolute bully, just an absolute rude bully. And Nigel now cannot contain himself, and he has to hop up on the apron and get involved. And Tony is just looking on. Tony is looking on like...
Although this also cracked me up because Tony just started commentating on it. He was like, Nigel is rightly furious. He's like, well, Nigel is getting in the ring to beat him up. And for some reason that when he had been like, Nigel, don't you dare, we talked about this. And then to immediately just go into like,
what was cracking me up is he still had, like, there was a point when the camera did pan to him and he, like, still had, like, a look on his face where he was, like, furious, but his voice didn't match that. So the vibe was very much that he was like, and Nigel's one of the most, you know, dangerous men who, and he's really, you know, Dax.
And when
really
he gets home tonight, we're going to have a talk about it.
Quite a talk. In public, we're united, but in private later on, right. I'm going to give him some shit.
It was like, sometimes your partner puts you in a position of having to back his play because of your job, but you don't want to. And this is not the last you'll be hearing about what happened here today, Mr. McGinnis. So then on Dynamite, it was announced ahead of time that Nigel was going to have a special in-ring segment. Immediately.
And we got messaged about it because the people were like, the girls need to know that this is happening. And thank God.
We're excited. Nigel is in the ring with Tony. And Tony's like, Nigel has something that he'd like to say. So Nigel... Go ahead, Nigel. Nigel says, well, first of all, I'd like to apologize to Tony.
And he was like, you know, I told you not to get involved, and I did it myself. I let myself get baited, and I apologize. And so Tony just stood there so smugly, like, that's right, you did. You yelled at me for this, and you did it.
And the apology did need to be as loud as the disrespect, so...
Absolutely. And it was like, you know that at some point in this argument, which I believe went into the wee hours of the morning, Tony's just saying, rules for thee, but not for me. Rules for me, but not for thee. Rules for me, but not for thee. So he's kind of nodding like, yes, thank you. I did need to hear that apology. Then
Nigel said, the world's most horniest thing that I cannot believe we heard with our own ears. He said, I know better now. My place is beside this man.
Okay, I think that line came later. But
my place beside this man in troth.
It's like giving. It's giving. Like you sent your stepford wife in for reprogramming. I know better now. Okay. I believe the order of operations here is that he was like, I have another person I need to apologize to, and Tony's still looking like that's correct. And it's Danny Garcia. Danny Garcia comes out, and my impression of this was that Danny Garcia, of course, is somehow their son. And that part of the long lecture that Nigel received was like, and it was disrespectful to Danny, because that was his big fight. And that was his big fight. How would you feel if someone did that at your big fight? You were young ones. And Nigel just keeps being like, oh, God, oh. So he apologizes, Danny, I'm really sorry I got involved and cost you a chance at the winner's purse. There was fucking more money on the fucking table.
Why
for this?
Is the money always available for the men? This is fucked up.
If I don't see a woman get a purse soon, I am going to flip a fucking table like I think I'm on Dynamite.
Allie, your place is with us. Not
Allie, you sit back down.
I know better now. I wish you'd come back on this podcast at the beginning, and Leah, and said, I know better now.
My place.
All right. So this, we've got a great little vibe here. Because Tony actually doesn't... Well, no. So we go into this next part. Danny is like... Yeah, don't worry about that. The issue actually is that there's two of them. So I need another guy. And I'm one guy, and you're guy number two. So we could fight FTR together. And Tony is making this sourpuss face like, well, that's not what I... That is not what I intended to happen.
Okay. Okay, Danny, that is not buddies.
I thought we just agreed that Dad is retired now. And that means
that Dad's place is beside this man, not in the ring.
This, I believe, is the point at which Nigel does say, my place is beside him, and touches Tony's shoulder. My place is beside him, not in the ring with you, Danny. And he's shooting him little looks in my mind castle. He's shooting him little looks like, is that what he wants? I think that's what he wants to hear. God, it sounds fun, though. Get in the ring. Sounds pretty fun. And so he's like, listen, Danny, we like don't even know each other, actually. So if we did fight, like it would probably go really bad. So we shouldn't do that.
It was actually so mean where he was like, Danny, get real. They would kill us.
I kind of loved it. I feel like you do not often enough get to hear wrestlers be like, oh, we'd get fucking clobbered. I loved it. I was like, Nigel, you've really endeared yourself to me over the past month and a half.
I know. I honestly cannot imagine telling myself it from even 6 months ago being like, this was the highlight of Dynamite.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
Nigel and Tony long talking segment about their feud with FTR gets you to sit the fuck up.
It's one of the things that's contributing to this somehow is that Nigel's whole look with his like little spiked hair that shaved on the sides, and he's wearing his tight little polos and his very skinny jeans, and his whole vibe is kind of like he's going through a little bit of a midlife crisis, like a chicken hawk crisis, where he's just like, God, and am I still hot? Like, I've just got and that, like, that Tony Schiavone is moonstruck, and he's being like, Cosmo, I just want you to know whatever you do, you're gonna die everybody else.
Tony's talking to Danny sometimes, and he's like, Danny, do you love him? And when you love them, they drive you crazy.
They love them, they drive you because they know they can. Because they know they can. Thanks, Rose. So that's the vibe. And then Stokely comes out and says a lot of stuff I didn't pay any attention to because I was just looking at Tony's face and like watching like where Tony at some point leaves the ring, but it's just like lurking in a corner nearby looking very upset about how things are going. What'd you guys think about Stokely?
It was fine. I think that was the part where it stopped being like as intensely erotic.
Yeah,
because I was like, okay, now we're setting up a match, and that's fine.
Yeah, and I am feeling more and more like I don't know if his energy is really working with FTR's energy. Like it feels like a real mismatch. Like it's not like he did a bad job or anything.
No, it just sucks because I don't know. I really like Stokely.
Yeah,
I want to see him on my TV once a week. I just wish it was with somebody else.
I think it's hard. I mean, I agree. And I'm also like, it's kind of hard because I'm like, I actually no longer remember why FTR are fighting with Danny Garcia. I guess they were mad that he didn't want to be evil with them. I don't know any part of this story except the part that is that Tony Schiavone and Nigel McGuinness are married and that Tony is a very angry mother this week and that Nigel is sleeping on the couch for the foreseeable future. So all like Stokely's coming out and I'm like, what does he have to do with any of this? Like, and I don't know what he said.
I don't know. I was really struck by, this is not about the Stokely part, just how funny it felt like there was a class dynamic between this commentary and wrestlers where like Nigel was like, I overstepped my bounds. I know that. I've given up that life. And now I'm in the commentary class.
I shouldn't have aspired above my station.
Right. Yeah. And Daniel Garcia's like response was like, no, you were fine the whole time. Come up, come to first class with me. We're going to do fine. And Nigel was like, no, my husband and I, we are in commentary.
We're in steerage.
We can't do that. That would be overstepping. And so it's funny that like, I don't know, like Nigel is bridging the gap where he's like, I used to belong to the class of wrestlers. Do I go back there and pursue glory? Or do I stay with my working class husband?
Okay, well, stay with your working class husband. Question asked and answered. It's kind of...
I think it's so funny that no men ever want to stay retired. Like, they make a huge deal out of their retirement match, and then they're like, that was so fun. Should we be bad? Should I come back out here next week? Which, actually, like, speaking of which, are you guys... I'm pretty surprised that Bryan Danielson, we haven't seen a hide or hair of since his retirement match that he said wasn't really a retirement match. But,
well, he did have quite a few... bodily health issues at that time, so
it's true.
You have to assume he's been.
And I think he's given interviews recently that he's been backstage helping books.
Yeah,
but it's quite
troubling to hear.
Quite the fortitude that he hasn't been on camera.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Let's give Bryan Danielson some props right now.
I mean, you have to now.
You have to give it to him.
So many retired men and how desperate they are. I sort of am like, you do have to hand it to him.
And it's true that if you think about this, it's like Tony, I have to assume, is basically putting a new marshmallow in front of Bryan Danielson every single week. There's a pile of them there. He's like, anytime you want to eat those marshmallows, please go right ahead because there's many more where those came from. Essentially, it's like Bryan Danielson is, you know, he's certainly holding out against some great pressure.
Yeah. I just keep thinking about that Gabe Kidd tweet that was like, old men, like, try to learn how to have fun with your friends without picturing your next entrance, you know? It's like,
God, that's real.
Good for you, Bryan Danielson.
But Ian, you have to admit, like, I can see how it would be hard. You have your retirement match. It's big and fun. You go home. You lie in your bed. You look up at the ceiling and you think, so I'll never put my hands on another man's body of violence again?
I'll never touch for the first time ever again?
That's when you put on your tight jeans and you put some gel in your hair and you say, I'm still hot.
I could get any match I wanted, Tony. I could get any match I wanted. Tony said, I thought the match you wanted was our life together. I thought this was the greatest adventure you could ever go on. I think they're going to make it. I think those crazy kids are going to make it.
Yeah.
Because I think that I just love thinking about them in the car, and I imagine Tony driving in stony silence, just like, I can't even.
He looked so mad. He was so furious.
Begin to discuss this with you right now. But then when I imagine Nigel, I really see him looking penitent. Like, I see him, like, he's looking at Danny in the backseat. He's like, we got Mom pretty upset, and that's on us. Because you should never, Danny, I've taught you this from a young age. Happy wife, happy life. We'll figure this out together, Danny. And if I had to guess, we will still have that match, though. Yes. And you may say, why did he say to his child, we've barely had a conversation? I believe that's just how it is between fathers and sons. So
Sometimes it is.
Anything that you wanted to talk about tonight that you did not get a chance to talk about?
Just briefly, it's very funny to me that... that Matt Menard came out of nowhere in this match, in this whole drama, just to be like, and to be clear, I still exist. And I am still
twice
Danny's actual father.
He did it on Collision, and then he did it again on Dynamite, which was especially funny, I have to say, given that I'm like, Danny does canonically have two fathers, but his second father doesn't give a fucking shit about him and couldn't even come out for one of these shows.
And FTR had said that they were like father figures to Danny too. Yeah. So it's like men see Danny Garcia and they're like, Is that my child?
It's the father son equivalent of beer flavored nipples, where it's like men see Danny Garcia and is like, that's my son.
Does that child need a mentor? Could that child be molded in my image?
And that child is surrounded by 10 other men. It's like, he's got one.
But that's actually why I think it's so important now for Tony Schiavone to be a father figure to Danny Garcia, because Tony Schiavone does not give off the vibe that he wants to mold a child in his image. Like, that's a father who will be like, Nigel, back off. Let him develop his own interests.
Let him be who he is.
I want to meet Dan. I don't want to meet FTR 2.0, Matt Menard 2.0, Nigel 2.0. I want to meet Danny Garcia.
Yeah.
That's my boy.
So true.
That's very beautiful. Tony,
it is beautiful.
We respect you as a parent.
That's a
good thing. Can you imagine how Tony Schiavone would feel if he just heard that?
I hesitate to imagine what Tony Schiavone would feel if he heard any of this. And knowing that he won't, I'll happily say Happy Mother's Day. On that note, I've been Allie.
I've been Anne.
And I've been Leah.
This is Tunnel Talk. Our theme is by Chris Corkin. You can find us on Twitter, Tumblr, Twitch, Blue Sky.
YouTube.
I'll email. Did I ask for help? Girls, did I ask for help? Did I ask for help in the peanut gallery?
Would you like us to apologize?
MySpace.
No, I just want to drive in silence for a while, Anne. I'll tell you when I want to hear from you. Our theme is by Chris Corkin. You can find us.
I'm leaving all of this in.
You can find us on Twitter, Tumblr, Twitch, and Blue Sky at Tunnel Talk Pod via email, tunneltalkpod@gmail.com. We have a souvenir stand. You can find it at chop-tees.com. You can find us on our feed, on the Social Suplex Network feed, along with a lot of other great podcasts, including Keeping It Strong Style. If you listen to this week's episode, you'll hear Leah. She's not there for good. She's coming. She's home. She's home now. She's safe. And you can find us on the Social Suplex Network Discord. Please rate, review, and subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. Stay frosty. And as always, please come back next week.
That was a good episode.
I think it was. I think it was good.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting.
It's the Sleep Number Everything Smart Bed Sale. Every smart bed and base are on sale during our Memorial Day event. Up to 50% off, plus free home delivery. Limited time. Exclusively to Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.